If you're a maintenance supervisor at a manufacturing facility and your machinery isn't working right, Grainger knows you need to understand what's wrong as soon as possible. So when a conveyor motor falters, Grainger offers diagnostic tools like calibration kits and multimeters to help you identify and fix the problem. With Grainger, you can be confident you have everything you need to keep your facility running smoothly. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
What is up, everybody? Welcome to The Stack. I'm Alex.
I am Pete.
And on The Stack, we talk about a bunch of books that have come out this week, and we review them with our mouths, and we listen to each other
that
with our
fun.
Ears, and we feel them with our hearts.
Oh, boy. You gonna get emotional on me?
I am. I'm going to start crying any second because we're going to kick this off talking about Absolute Flash, number 8 from DC Comics, written by Jeff Lemire, art by Travis Moore. Now, no pun intended, but DC's Absolute line has been on a real run these past couple of weeks with some huge books coming out and huge revelations. We've been talking about that for weeks so far. Absolute Flash, number 8, I would argue, certainly gets towards that realm potentially by flashing back. Oh my gosh. By going back and showing us. By showing us some of the origin of Absolute Universe's Barry Allen, we find out about. And I should put a spoiler warning here for all the books we're going to be talking about in The Stack. But we find out about Absolute Eobard Thawne. We find out about Absolute Jay Garrick. We find out about where Grodd came from. We got to see. Well, sure looks like the Legion of Doom's headquarters just hanging out.
Yeah, building the Hall of Doom, right?
Yeah.
It seemed like it.
Crazy stuff happening in this issue. This is, I think, been one of the slow burn titles. We were kind of on it with the first issue. But man, it's really, and I'm going to try to avoid these puns as much as possible, really getting going. And this issue I liked a lot in particular, because we're starting to fill in a lot of the pieces that we've seen throughout previous issues in terms of this mystery of how Wally West got his powers. There's more mysteries here, but I'm starting to understand this is like a sci-fi conspiracy book. That's what's happening here. And I'm starting to dig it more. But what about you, Pete? I know you're not a big Flash guy.
Yeah, I'm not a Flash guy. And, you know, not to disagree with you here, but for this issue, for me, I felt like this is starting to be more like a Flash book than I wanted it were before. It started out and it didn't feel like Flash at all, which I thought was very refreshing and cool. And then as we've been going, the later issues have kind of been like getting a little too flashy for me. And so but man, just kind of seeing the Hall of Doom in here got me very excited. Other than the Flash stuff, I feel like the art's really great, and I don't know. This book, it's tough because I was having a great time, and then not so much of late.
Yeah, I'm very curious. It is starting to have a cumulative effect, like I said, for me, but we'll see. I don't know.
Yeah, time will tell.
Time will tell. Next up, Fantastic Four X Gargoyles, number 1 for Marvel, written by Greg Weisman, art by Edith Balam. This is a long-awaited crossover between the Manhattan Clan and the First Family as they battle a lot of people. There's a lot of stuff going on.
Oh, my God.
Pete.
Yeah.
How do you feel about this? I know you're not necessarily enthused about Fantastic Four, but how do you feel about Gargoyles of the mix?
I'm Team Gargoyles, dude. I love that show. I'm a huge fan. I got very excited when I saw this cover because I was like, oh, hopefully this will be more Gargoyles than FF. And man, was I right. This was so much Gargoyles. It got real deep into the Gargoyles lore. It was a lot of characters. I mean, we start off with Demona. I was like, oh, shit. But yeah, it is chaotic because they drop so much. But I was having a blast. There's so many cameos. There's a lot going on. But man, fun Gargoyle story at the center of all this. Love the art. Love this kind of idea. And I thought it was maybe a little much, but I still loved it.
Yeah, it was a little too much for me because I liked, like you're saying, a lot of the ideas are there. And it is funny to have the Fantastic Four and Gargoyles fighting Grey Gargoyle and then meeting the Gargoyle. And I get like all of these things, but then when they start laying around with, and also there's Demona and there's whatever those robot gargoyles are. And additionally, here's Diablo. I was like, too much, too much. The snowball has rolled too far down the hill at this point. It is too large. And I wish it had simplified a little bit more down to just these two teams working together, because that part is fun. Greg Weisman has a handle, obviously, on the voice of the Gargoyles. He knows the Fantastic Four pretty well as well. I thought, frankly, the scene of the meeting was the most fun I had of the issue. There's a little aside that Ben Grimm has where he's like, oh, man, we're not going to do the thing where we have a misunderstanding and fight.
But, yeah.
Bummer.
Yeah.
It's like, okay, that's a good crossover joke.
Yeah,
that's good.
It's fun. It's a fun bit.
But I don't know. I felt like this was the I'm shooting my shot issue, and I wish there was a little bit of that and a little more focus on just a nice, simple, fun story. But it is what it is.
Yeah.
Next up, Yuletide, number one from OD Press, written by George Northey, art by Rochelle Aragno. This is a original story about a bunch of kids who live in a town called Christmas that is obviously all big about Christmas, particularly around Christmas time, and they get embroiled in a supernatural mystery plot involving an artifact that releases some of the bad folks who want to take over the Yuletide and rule winter. They've been definitely pitching this as Goonies, but set with winter mythology stuff, which always, frankly, puts me off a little bit when people call out Goonies. I'm like, all right, that was a thing back in the 80s.
Hey, watch your mouth now. That's still a thing.
No, all I'm saying is everybody's going for that vibe, and very few people get even close to it when they're trying it.
Yeah.
This book nails it. I'd agree. Big ups, because this doesn't try to ape Goonies. Instead, it gives us some very fun characters that look great. Like, they look like they walked just right out of an animated show.
Yeah.
Some really good kind of terrifying beasts and monsters. And it's fun. It's quick. It's witty. I super dug this book.
Yeah, I agree. I love the look of it. I love the kind of whole kind of tone of it. Really well executed idea. The kind of like less scary in parts because of the art, which I really appreciated. But I cannot wait for the next issue. More please. Loved it. Oh shit. What's in the box? What's in the box? This is great. They did such a great job in this first issue of getting you on board and excited. And they really delivered.
Next up, Titans number 28 from DC Comics, written by John Layman, art by Pete Woods. This is a DC KO tie-in showing how the Titans are, per the cover, as you can see if you're watching us on video, Evacuation Earth. They're evacuating the Earth because it's about to become a heart of apocalypse. They got to get everybody out. And that's what the bulk of this issue is taken up with. We haven't read Titans for the past couple of issues because I think we weren't necessarily enthused with this new run. But I thought it was worth checking back in as a DC KO tie-in. So what'd you think, Pete?
Yeah, this is cool. Tara talking some shit about Beast Boy. A little spicy. Some X talking shit. Great art. This is great. This is cool. You know, we got this kind of crazy evacuation madness everywhere. And then Granny Goodness showing up with her hit squad. So fun last panel. Not too much happens, but it's kind of a cool check-in, so we know what's up with the Titans. And the little hot goss. Great job, Pete Woods, you know what I mean?
I do really like Pete Woods' art a lot. I will say, and I think maybe this is what you're kind of getting to, very similar to the Gargoyles Fantastic Four issue, I felt like there was too much going on here. Like, the stuff that's focusing on, we got to evacuate the Earth, even if they seem to all be in very well-branded T-shaped ships, which I was like, okay, guys, like, just calm down with the
T-shaped ships. You got to have T-shaped ships.
You got to do the branding.
You got to have a ship that's not in the shape of a T? I mean, come on.
Yeah, how do you know the Titans are saving you if it's not a T? It's like the Avengers. They always have A-shaped ships, whatever they're flying everywhere. Are Quinjets shaped like that because they're shaped like A's?
I don't think so.
Yeah, probably not.
Yeah.
in any case, I felt like there was a lot going on. There was a lot of time spent at the beginning with the Titans being like, well, goodbye. We may never see each other again. And I was like, why are we wasting time on this? We know they're going to see each other.
You never know, man.
I guess.
They're taking a moment.
The evacuation thing was interesting. I did think the terror scene, like you said, was interesting. I have a question for you as the original grandma lover, which is, I believe, the sticker you have on the back of your car. How do you feel about Granny Goodness at the end there? Because when Granny Goodness pulls up on her little Kirby sled, I'm kind of like, I don't find that threatening.
What are you talking about? She's got so many parademons with her. It's intimidating.
Sure. It's just like sort of the granny in the middle there I'm questioning, not the parademons.
Okay. Well, you know, someone's got to roll with the parademons and it's Granny Goodness.
Yeah. I guess I shouldn't have laughed then when they were like, oh, no, it's Granny Goodness. Also, her name is Granny Goodness. I'm just saying.
She's not good.
Yeah. She's
but
not
she
good.
She is a granny.
Yeah. She is a granny. She has many wonderful grandkids.
I don't know if that's true, but she's kind of a ridiculous character, but. I still thought it was a fun, oh shit kind of moment. I'm a Granny Goods defender, I guess.
Yeah. You're the original granny lover, as it says. I'm going to make you that sticker for your birthday. One World Under Doom, number 8 from Marvel, written by Ryan North, art by R.B. Silva. In this issue, some big stuff is going down as the assembled heroes of Earth are trying to fight back against Doom. Valeria is trying to talk him down from this fight, leading to a devastating moment at the end here. Pete, you are cheering, though.
Yes.
Which I'd say I'm surprised by, but I know exactly why you're cheering, but take it away.
Okay, well, first let me start by saying every time you say R.B. Silva, I want you to be saying Arby's for some reason, and I'm like, oh, Arby's.
Well, I guess from the art perspective, do you think he's got the beats?
Well, first off, this is a cool cover. This is a very cool cover.
This is the thing punching out Dr. Doom, yes.
Yeah, and so I think the thing that we're both talking about is Dr. Doom's love of Valeria is just such a sweet, beautiful thing. It kind of gets a little ruined by the end, but I love this about Doom. I love this kind of like part of his character, part of his history, this thing of like he's evil, he destroys worlds, he's whatever, but, you know, he's an uncle and, you know, he loves his niece. So it just gets me every time. It was such a touching moment. And, of course, the end was heart-wrenching, but man alive, I was having a great time up until that point. This was awesome.
I'm shocked, Pete, because I thought the reason you were cheering is the thing that happens in the middle of the issue, which was the one page that made me laugh out loud, where the assembled heroes charge up Thor's hammer, not Mjolnir, but the other one, which I'm blanking on the name of, and Thing picks it up and is like, oh, hell yeah, I knew I was worthy. You know what time it is. And I was like, this is a wrestling page. This is great.
Yeah, it is.
I love this.
That was cool.
That was my favorite part of the issue, because just watching him, I love the thing. He's a great guy. And watching him slam Dr. Doom was awesome. That was very satisfying. I also like that this issue actually put it in Dr. Doom's perspective, something that I've been talking about a lot. I think the series has been lacking from, and made me wish that we got to go back and have the whole thing as a, this is focused on Doom rather than the heroes. I think that would have made it maybe a little more interesting from the perspective wise. I do like the Valeria stuff. I have a question and a knock for this issue. Oh. My question for the issue is, so at the end of this issue, Dr. Doom does a finishing move where he shoots his armor at everybody. And he says, like, I didn't kill them, but I incapacitated them. Isn't that cool? I'm supreme. And he doesn't realize that Valeria has teleported in at the same time. And she's riddled with these Doom armor shrapnel things.
Yeah, shards.
Yes. And falls over, and it sure looks
Doom
like
sharded all over the world.
There you go. Sure looks like in the last battle that her head slides off. Did you get that?
Sure did, buddy.
That didn't happen, right? Like, she didn't get decapitated by
last
decapitate a child.
That's the thing about last panels. You know what I mean? They can be the next issue. They're like, what? Well, I don't know what you're talking about. You know, so, or
I think this points to my knock at the issue. The bigger problem, I don't think the art is good.
Take it easy.
It is very hard to tell what's going on in this issue at most points. The backgrounds, as I've mentioned in previous issues, are just like noise washes. And there's ways of making that work. I was trying to think about, like, why do I like this from some artists and not others? And I'm thinking about Russell Dodderman does, say, a lot of colors in the background, but the front is clear and the characters are clear and the action is clear when he's doing that, versus this that just seems like a jumble where by the end of the issue, either Valeria is falling over or her head is sliding off, and either way we don't necessarily know. So that is taking away quite a bit from the story for me, which is a real bummer in the second to last issue here. Also, don't kill a child.
Yeah, I hear you, man. I hear you. I mean, we don't know. I'm looking at the kind of last panel now. It sure does look like a headless kid there.
Yeah.
Man. That's
it's
tough.
Really hard. It should not be that hard to tell. Like, if they're trying to be like, she fell over, fine. But if the stage direction is her head slides off, that's a crazy thing to drop in a, like, mostly silhouetted final panel of an issue. That's not even a, like, ooh, wow, what a good cliffhanger for next month. That's like, maybe I never want to read a comic again. I don't know.
Well, wow, guy. Yeah, I'm just kind of paging through the art here, and there's some really impressive splash page action stuff. There's also some, like, the smaller, like, him, like, golden version floating in space stuff is also really beautiful.
There's pretty colors in here. I just think it's the pencils or inks that are not working for me, and I feel like the colors are working overtime to compensate for that.
All right. Well, I don't know, man, if I agree. I just think that they're purposely not making it clear on that last panel, and I think that, you know, that's the way they kind of wanted it.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't blame the artist as much as that's kind of what they wanted to kind of make it seem like. Could it be this or could it, you know, I don't know.
Well, I guess we'll find out next issue.
We will.
When
the head drops.
A child's funeral, I guess.
That'll great. Be rough. That'll be real.
That sure will be rough.
Yeah. Not looking forward to that funeral.
Hector Plasm, Hunt the Bigfoot, number one from Image Comics, written by Benito Serrano, art by Derek Hunter. This is part of not an ongoing series, but a series of miniseries that has come back after a long while about a supernatural investigator who fights only specific types of monsters, not all monsters, and gets recruited or denies getting recruited. He does not want to be recruited to hunt for the Bigfoot of the title. Pete, this is right in your wheelhouse. So
wheel it
away.
I love this. I love this so much. I love the art. I love the imagination. I love the creativity. I love the shading. I love the coloring. I love the letterboxing. I don't know. I just, this comic spoke to me. It's whimsical. It's fun. It's weird. It's creepy. It's all the things in such a cool art style. It reminds me a little bit of Jim Davis with the eyes and just kind of the way he draws humans. So I don't know. It's there's something about this that really speaks to me. I just had such a blast with this. This felt really refreshing and cool and all this other kind of superhero stuff. So yeah, I just really was impressed by this. They did such a great job on this.
I really enjoyed this, too. This is a very funny, fun book with some really charming art by Derek Hunter. We've read a lot of supernatural investigator mysteries, but having a cranky one who doesn't want to be involved, I think, gives it a nice new twist. So I enjoyed it. I'm looking forward to more.
Yes, more, please.
Next up, Mouse Man knows that mice have ears.
No.
And it's time for Wonder Woman number 26 from DC Comics. Written by Tom King, art by Daniel Sampere. Wonder Woman is on an island ruled by Mouse Man. And
dude,
this issue, we find how he came to power, though we don't get all of the answers, because as we find by the issues. And he's actually able to go toe-to-toe with Wonder Woman strength-wise. What's going on there? We'll definitely find out. And Wonder Woman is in a bad place by the end as well. Pete, you're wearing the shirt. What do you think?
Well, first off, I love this book. I love what's going on here as far as the overarching story. This issue is rough because our team is losing. Mouseman is winning. And so that's frustrating, but I'm very excited to keep reading, and hopefully we can turn this around, you know what I mean? So the good guys could win. But man, this is such amazing art. Tons of action, insane twists and turns. And stuff like this makes me glad I don't live in New York City anymore, man. Those fucking rats are huge, bro. Fucking huge.
I'm really liking this arc as well, particularly as we are experiencing a rise in fascism here in the United States. It's a tough read, but watching, or rather reading, Tom King plumbing into the origins of this sort of thing at the same time through a superhero context makes it feel very timely. It's also really putting Wonder Woman on her back foot in a surprising way. So you feel nervous for her and you want her to win. Everything in this arc has been so easy up until this issue. And like you said, Daniel Semperi is incomparable in the action arena.
A badass cover too. This is really cool.
Amazing Spider-Man, number 14 from Marvel, written by Joe Kelly, art by Ed McGuinness and Todd Knock. This is the part of the storyline that's focusing on what's happening on Earth, where Norman Osborn is in the Spider-Man costume and Ben Reilly is trying to be Peter Parker. And while we got that revelation, this issue shows how it's actually kind of difficult for both of them in different ways to be stepping into these roles, which, you know, gives you a real appreciation for Peter Parker and everything that he does, I think. Right, Pete?
Sure. I'm just excited that you're having such a great time. I think Joe Kelly is an amazing writer. And so I'm just happy that this is like hitting such a chord with you.
Oh, that's very sweet, Pete. Thank you very much. This is hitting a chord with me. I'm really enjoying this Amazing Spider-Man run quite a bit. This was an interesting one because it does complicate things for these two characters, and it jumps around to a lot of different places. But I feel like the last couple of issues were a little more focused. But I like what they're doing with Ben Reilly and Chasm. I like what they're doing with Hallow's Eve in this issue.
Yes, Hallow's Eve.
Favorite characters of the past couple of years.
Janine.
And the Norman stuff, giving him new villains and a rogues gallery of his own, is pretty neat as well. Let's move on then and talk about G.I. Joe, number 12 from Skybound and Image Comics, written by Joshua Williamson, art by Marco Fodera. This issue is not exactly a done in one, but we are focusing on a new Joe called Shooter.
Yeah.
Who's been imprisoned. How
Shooter's
she gets out,
tour.
Why she gets out. Pete, you're our G.I. Joe guy. Take it away.
Come on, Shooter McGavin. What's up? This is, I mean, I'm having a blast with this. This is just, this is Shooter's tour, man. Go back to your shanties. I think that this is just kind of cool. We get Lady J in here. We get Beachhead. I mean, who doesn't love Beachhead? You know what I mean? Come on.
Major. And why is he Beachhead? He doesn't seem to have like a sandy complexion or anything like that. Like, what's going on with him?
I don't know, man. It's been a long time since I remember the origin story. You're supposed of to know Beachhead.
This is why we hired you for this show.
I love Beachhead. He's had a lot of great, fun stuff in this, and it's nice to see him being himself in here. But and then we get Major Blood, who teams up with Destro and Cobra. But Destro's got some side projects, man. He's got some evil side plans. I love this. This really feels like it's an extension of the cartoon that I love from back in the day. So, yeah, this just is hitting on all cylinders for me, and it is an absolute blast.
I thought this issue was all right. This is a solid but unspectacular issue. I enjoyed the Shooter character. There seems to be a lot of pieces that are being set in place for other things. Frankly, this left me with more of an appetite for the next issue when we're getting Tom Reilly back on art. Nothing against the art for this one, but Tom Reilly is so good on this title, and the focus of the Dreadnought War that's coming up.
Oh,
I think,
man,
that's going to help a lot to give it a lot of oomph going forward.
Cool. Yeah. Well, but crazy Shooter is, might not be the best good guy. So, you know, I mean, that was some cold-blooded shit.
Justice League Red, number 3 from DC Comics, written by Saladin Ahmed, art by Clayton Henry. This is a team put together by Red Tornado that is doing basically some dastardly deeds against will to try to stop the rise of Apocalypse. I am very curious, given that revelation, this issue, because he lays out like, hey, I've seen Apocalypse is coming. There's nothing we can do to stop it unless we do these things, and I think we'll be successful. And they're leading up to a mission they're almost definitely not going to do next issue. So I'm wondering how this ties into DC KO, which is kind of the same thing. Like, are we going to find out in issue 5 or 6 that they failed and DC KO happens, or what happens? Or is it 2 parallel train running? I'm not sure.
Yeah, I hear you. But a fun kind of last panel. You know, we got the fun bad guys, the Church of Blood here. Green Lantern is just ridiculous for using sticky hands to fight. I mean, that just drives me insane. Yeah, I love the pace, love the art. This really does feel like a kind of Justice League book, and you can't trust Red Tornado. I've said it once, I'll say it again.
Yeah, you never stop saying that.
Yeah.
And I never stop saying it is time for the Age of Revelation to begin. It is once again upon us, as we're going to be talking about this week.
What is this hand gesture thing that you're doing here?
The sun. I would do a better gesture if we didn't have like a small StreamYard window going on here, but I would, I would reach around and I would...
I'll let it go.
Glad that tickled you.
You got that and all that out too, man. I don't know. That's a lot of work.
Yeah, I'm not going to do it. Well, we're going to be talking about this week's Age of Revelation titles, the X-Men titles, where they've been taken years into the future, where Revelation has destroyed and wrecked a bunch of
Revelations!
Worlds. We'll talk about each title individually, but we got Unbreakable X-Men, Iron and Frost, Rogue Storm, Sinister Six. Yeah, that's it. I was about to skip to the next one, which has a similar title. Those are our titles for this week. Again, we won't do this every week, but just 2 weeks in, I know we were like kind of 50-50 last week about the beginning titles. Now we're 2 weeks in. Now we have even more titles. How are you feeling about this event?
Not good.
Worse than before.
I'm going to go ahead and say, yeah, worse.
Oh, interesting. Okay. I still am on kind of the same track where there were some titles I liked this week, some titles I wasn't quite into. But the thing that was weird to me about this week that I think they did last week, but I didn't notice as much, is ostensibly the event has gone 10 years into the future, but they're also showing us, like, here's what happened 6 years in the future and 7 years in the future. And I appreciate they put in the work to figure out the whole timeline, but also I'm like, just jump 10 years in the future and show us what's good. Like, hit the ground and let's go from there. So anyway, I'm not quite sure what we're doing with this event quite
yet. You don't like all this foreplay is what you're saying. You're like, let's get to it.
Yeah, let's get to the reach around. Unbreakable X-Men. This is written by Gail Simone, art by Lucas Wernick. And this is focusing on the New Orleans X-Men, or at least what are left of them. And this is a book where we get to see what happened to Rogue, what happened to Gambit, a bunch of other things going on here that are pretty bad. Pete, what'd you think about this one?
Well, first off, really love the art style. So cool. It had such a cool tone to it. Has this kind of like, they're like, all right, this starts 7 years from now. Has this kind of future kind of look to it, which I really appreciated. Yeah, this is heartbreaking, man. This is heartbreaking to see kind of what happens with Rogue and this whole Galactus thing. And then, you know, Remy is blind, but, you know, sick long hair, you know. It's a tough start because it's like, hey, want to hear a fucked up story about some characters you love? I'm not sure. Well, tough shit. Buckle up, asshole. So it's not fun to watch people you root for die or get frozen as giant beings. You know what I mean?
I agree with you on Lucas Wernick's art. I thought it was great throughout, as it always is. And Gail Simone just has a great handle on Gambit and Rogue. So this beginning of the issue that really focuses on the relationship, I thought was great. Really good. And like you're saying, very heartbreaking throughout. It starts to get into more of the mythology that she set up in Uncanny X-Men in the second part of the issue. And I'm sort of two minds of that. One, it's complicated, so it loses a bit of that strong emotion of those first couple of pages. But I also laud her for continuing and expanding on the story she is already telling versus wiping it clean and essentially telling a new story that takes place 10 years later. So I think that's good. That makes it fit right in with Uncanny X-Men. But like I said, the beginning was such a strong shot across the bow that when we eventually got to like, okay, we're dealing with the Dark Artery and Galactus under the sea and all of these other things. So it's like, there's a lot. I'm not quite as emotionally attached to these things as I am to Rogue and Gambit, one of the great love stories of comics. So that's all. But happy to follow this one going. Why don't we turn to the next one? Another love story, Iron and Frost, number one from Marvel, written by Kevin Scott, art by Ruari Coleman. Again, we get jumping back a few years to show what happened to Emma Frost. We don't exactly get to see what happened to Tony Stark, but at least, as you can tell from the title, this book is dealing with the romance that they had towards the end of the Krakoa era and extrapolating into this new era. It's too bad Justin, our third co-host, isn't here because this is definitely his thing. Like this,
he
is his
loves
OTP.
This couple. He loves this team up. He loves Iron Man and Frost. So this is right in his alley. And if Justin,
what do you
here,
think, Pete?
If Justin was here, he would just talk about how great this is. So just have a nice moment for that. But Frost is kind of. I don't know, man. I it's hard to root for this. And then the reveal at the end, I'm like, oh, shit, the Iron King. Google. Who the fuck is the Iron King? I'm not sure what's happening.
Yeah, so, the reveal of the Iron King at the end is just maybe Tony Stark died and he's sort of like a Tin Woodsman type deal now who is all armor. We don't exactly know. Maybe he's protecting himself from the mutant virus. Also, we don't know about that. But yeah, I don't know. I kind of like the stuff with Emma Frost in this issue. I thought that was well done. And I do think there's very clearly a Wizard of Oz theme going on with the fact that she doesn't have a heart and Tony Stark is the Tin Woodman. I guess we'll see what happens with any of the other characters and whether they go on a journey to see the wizard, being Revelation probably or something
like that. It's just hard for me when it's like, oh man, Frost is going through all this kinds of stuff. And it's like, well, she's kind of the worst. It's hard to root for a character you don't like. You know what I mean?
I don't know. I really like this couple as well. Maybe not as strongly as Justin, but I'm curious to see what they do with this romance going forward because I'm happy to see it again. I'm happy to play with it.
Okay.
What about...
So let me just to recap, yes. You like to reach around and you like to play with it. All right, cool. You're doing good.
Pete, what are you? 12, come on. Rogue Storm, number one. This is also from Marvel, written by Murray Ayodele, art by Roland Boski. And again, we're getting these two jumping timelines. You're seeing this as a theme here with this week, where we find out that at some point in the past, Rogue split into two Rogues, Rogue Red and Rogue Green. And that's how, though Rogue is dead in Unbreakable X-Men, she's still alive in Rogue Storm. She tried to kill Storm because Storm was going crazy and out of control with her powers and destroying the Sahara. And then in the future, Storm is coming after Rogue and wants to kill her. So we're getting two halves to the story, which is plainly depicted on the cover here. What'd you think, Pete?
Well, first off, sick cover, bro. You know what I mean? Like, this is cool. Really does a great job of setting things up for the inside. But this is heartbreaking, man. I don't like to see these two queens fighting. You know, they're unbelievable characters, some of my favorites. And, I love the art, but, it's also heartbreaking when you got green and red and, like, one gets love and the other gets to hide behind a tree and cry about it. I mean, it's just heartbreaking. But Storm being a badass at moments is really cool, and those sick knuckle dusters are fucking badass for Rogue. So I'm enjoying this as much as I hate to see them fight. I still think this is a really badass idea and well drawn. So out of all of this is the thing that I'm enjoying the most.
I wanted to shout out the Rogue Red, Rogue Green is my favorite thing that has come out of this event so far, just because it is the only thing that doesn't feel like, yeah, it's Cyclops, but he has kind of a bigger beard now, you know, or like, oh, it's Wolverine, but he's lost his memory again, and now he has a different costume. The Rogue Red, Rogue Green is such a, like, classic comic book thing, and to throw in there, oh, yeah, there was this event that you missed where they were split into two people, and now there's two Rogues, makes... That's exactly the sort of thing you would have seen, like, a X-Men storyline play out over the course of 12 issues a year or whatever before they're integrated. And so to throw that in there, be like, oh, yeah, it's not just all about Revelation and everything that's happening, but also, like, other comic book storylines have been going on at the same time is great. And I agree with you. I don't want to see Rogue and Storm fight. But the idea of setting them up as these diametric opposites, giving us paired stories of them coming to each other, is once again just such creative structure for Marwa Iyodele, who is crushing it on the Storm book as well. I thought this was great. Like, this is just a good comic that I really enjoyed reading that almost barely has anything to do with the Age of Revelation event. And frankly, maybe that's like, that's good. It's using it as a springboard to be like he does at every issue. Yeah, I can do whatever I want with this, so why don't I do whatever I want? Why don't I choose the most interesting possibility rather than the safest possibility? So, really good stuff. And last one, Sinister Six, number one for Marvel, written by David Marquez, art by Rafael Lorero. Per the title, this is a team run by Mr. Sinister, and in this issue, they're trying to track down Venom. And,
oh, man.
By the end of the issue, it's revealed that Sinister is trying to send his team to take down Revelation. So that's what's going on. Pete?
Yeah, that is what's going on. You got the heroes from higher here. You know, they're not the prize, but they're bait. That was a kind of fun line that was delivered there. That was fun. Yeah, and bait for Venom. And then we see Lord Sinister, which I don't know how I feel about that title. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Lord Sinister seems like he's got somebody's kid he's holding, which I don't like that either. Yeah, but the Lord wants to stop the Revelation. So hopefully that'll happen. You know what I mean?
As opposed to Rogue Storm, this is the most classic crossover comic book to me, where you just got this team, they're going to go on a mission, you throw in a couple of cameos, and you're good to go. Like, I thought this was fine, this was solid, but it also plays into one of the things that I just do not get as of yet with this event at all, is why any of these characters have signed up with anybody else.
Yeah.
Like, definitely when they're like, I believe in what Revelation is doing, I'm one of his seraphs, I'm like, why? What? Why did you choose this side? What's exactly going on here? And it's the same thing with the Sinister team, where I'm like, why are they working for Sinister? I don't quite understand.
Also, I guess it infers that, like, he has things on all of them. That's why.
Maybe. I don't know. It just didn't seem abundantly clear to me in this first issue. And again, it was just like, hey, let's put some cool X-Force-y style characters together and turn Black Cat into another cat character. And then when we already have several X-Men cat characters at this point, and then go and do some extreme stuff. And that's fine. It's fun. But I just want something a little more oomph. You know? All right. Well, there you go. That's the Revelation is over this week.
Let's Revelation move on, Black.
Move on and talk about Rogue Sun at number 30 from Image Comics, written by Ryan Parrott and Nick Cotton, art by Abel. I wanted to throw this one in the stack because Spawn shows up.
Come on.
And teams up with Rogue Sun and versus the Gargoyles. Fantastic 4-1. This is more classic. They do fight, then they team up. And we get a tease that there's more to come next year, which is pretty cool. Pete, you're more the Spawn guy. I'm more the Rogue Sun guy. Can we agree on this book? Let's see.
I hope so. Yeah, this is great. You see Spawn and Rogue Sun kind of team up. and, you know, to fight this witch. And, you know, Spawn just kind of stomps out her heart, which is cold-blooded, but that's how Spawn rolls. Yeah, and then we get the fun kind of Violator reveal. So, yeah, this was a nice comic package. I felt very seen. I felt great art. I don't know why, because they went with, like, Spawn in the medieval times, but not medieval Spawn, which I was a little, like, as a huge fan of medieval Spawn, I was like, oh, why didn't we use medieval Spawn here? But maybe that would have been too confusing.
Well, let me ask you a question. Medieval Spawn is like a knight, right?
Yeah.
Okay, I think that's why. Because what I really liked about this issue that I thought was very smart is, I don't know why that happened, which is very smart, is that you think Rogue Son, who looks like a knight, is going to be the good guy, and Spawn, who is a Hellspawn, is the bad guy. You know, whatever we know about the characters, like, that's how they're presenting themselves. Mm-hmm. But Spawn is the one who's actually better and conflicted about everything that's going on, and Rogue Son is kind of a jerk and not particularly great. So there was a really nice flip there in terms of the expectations, and I'd imagine that's why they didn't use medieval Spawn, who they are going to be using this upcoming crossover, because then you would have these two knight characters versus two people that are coming at this problem from very different directions.
Okay, well, thank you for explaining it to me. It makes me feel better.
That was my take on it, because I really like this issue. I thought this was a really good crossover issue.
Great issue. Yeah, really fun.
Yeah, best issue. The best crossover I've ever read, Pete.
Oh, my God. Wow, we're really plussing it up.
Yeah. Well, let's see if we plus this one up. Krypto, the Last Dog of Krypton, number 5 from DC Comics, written by Ryan North, art by Mike Norton. The final issue of this title is Krypto finally makes his way home to Superboy. This has been a rough emotional journey for our boy Krypto. How'd you feel about how it wrapped up, Pete?
Great. I was really impressed how much I like this. I like this a lot more than I thought I was. Really just a kind of touching story, you know, talking about Krypto, not the currency, you know, saving a family and then find Superman and they're finally together at last, and just sweet ending. Great art. I was really impressed by this kind of like Krypto walking the earth, helping people along the way, kind of kung fu thing that this was. Awesome. Impressed.
I really like this as well, and I thought it was really sweet how it wrapped up. The thing that I've been saying every issue so far is Mike Norton has really evolved his style for this book in a surprising way. It's really clean, really beautiful, and it just feels timeless in the same way that it's a very different style, but the same way Tim Sale's art feels for, Superman for All Seasons and other things. So I really like this. This is a great volume. Definitely pick it up if you have not. Next up, The Punisher, Red Band, number 2 from Marvel, written by Benjamin Percy, art by Julius Ota. The Punisher is being controlled by the Kingpin, who has decided he wants to clean up New York in the bloodiest way possible. We get to see more of that this issue as Frank wrestles with being mind controlled, as well as Tombstone bloodily doing stuff. And one thing that I said with the last issue that I will continue to emphasize with this one, it actually, in a rare case, is earning its red band rating because some real gross stuff happens in here.
Yeah, it sure does, buddy. This is tough. This is really tough for me. Because every time I'm like, yes, another Punisher comic, I'm so excited to read this. And then at some point during the comic, they lose me, which is weird. But hey, you know, it's selfish of me to think that I'm going to love every Punisher comic, or every comic is going to be in my wheelhouse. You know what I mean? So I got to learn to share. And but some of the fun parts for me were old ladies talking on the phone and then Frank shoots the phone out of her hand. She's trying to call 911. So there were some fun over-the-top moments, but it lost me when Kingpin started getting naked and whipping himself.
He was flagellating himself. That's something that he was doing in Daredevil as well, right?
I don't remember that.
I think so.
But I don't know. I was having fun up until there.
This issue wasn't as strong to me as the first issue, which was this you know, big statement piece. Here we're getting more of it and continuing it, but there wasn't really a standout scene or revelation like there was in the first issue. It just kind of kept going with what it was doing.
I mean, there was a badass like moment with the droid shooting the semi truck. You know, that was kind of badass.
It was okay. I did like the description of, what was it, him heading through the Lincoln Tunnel like a bullet through the barrel of a gun. That was some good writing.
That was some good writing there.
Yeah, there you go. Invincible Universe Battle Beast, number 6 from Skybound Image Comics, written by Robert Kirkman, art by Ryan Ottley. Battle Beast is fighting one of these two gigantic colossuses, one of whom he thought he killed. Spoiler, he did not, as we find out in this issue. And the other one he is going head-to-head with, and she is unprepared for the fury of Battle Beast. Then, by the end of this issue, we get some huge, huge cameos and tease of more for the Invincible Universe that are very fun. I continue to really enjoy this comic. It's silly. It's over the top. It knows what it is, which is just big things fighting.
Yes, I fucking love this comic. This continues to be one of my favorite in the stack. And I wish I could go back in time when we were talking about the DCKO event and we were asked who we want to see, because Battle Beast would be an unbelievable fun character reveal. That would be such a blast. But this book continues to kick so much ass and be such a fun exploration of Battle Beast. He is kind of taking on this giant monster. And then is about to win, and the monster like calls a timeout, which is kind of hilarious, and then just kind of throws him across the world to give themselves some time to heal before the battle rages back on. But yeah, I'm having such a blast with this. This is so insanely violent in all the right ways. Amazing art and action, cool cover. I have been just having an absolute blast with this.
Also, I'd throw out there, beyond everything you said, because this is very fun, we get our little prince guy who got smooshed last issue. He very quickly grows back his tiny limbs, which is very nice. And then the ship's computer that they were riding around is now in his former robot armor body. They started drawing that robot armor body as kind of like a sexy lady. And I think there's going to be some romance going on between our shrunken prince and the ship armor. I'm just going to throw that out there.
Oh, wow.
What do you think, Pete? You into it? You shipping the ship?
I don't know if I'm shipping the ship, but the kind of tease of the Viltrumites throwing conquest our way is also very exciting.
Yeah, and then we have a 5-month break, so we'll see you back here then.
See you in 5 months. Okay, sure, I'll be here waiting.
Captain America number 4 from Marvel, written by Chip Zdarsky, art by Valerio Sheedy. Hey, Captain Chip America Zdarsky is fighting Doctor Doom, a rarity for the Marvel Universe. Meanwhile, David Coulton, the other Captain America who was brought in while he was on ice, is wrestling with the dastardly deeds that the United States government is making them do, leading to potentially a confrontation next issue. I've been a little iffy about this run, but how are you feeling about this one, Pete?
Well, yeah, this is tough because we get two stories here. One story I absolutely love, and the second one not so much. So kind of watching Cap.
Which one do you love and which one do you not love?
I liked the one him fighting Doom. That was great. Really awesome. But the one where he's kind of going bad is heartbreaking as fuck.
Oh, but that's a different Cap. That's David Coulton.
Yeah. Oh, still. Okay. It's not fun.
Yeah, it's not fun. I keep punting this off, but I got to read next issue to know how this actually comes together. Because so far, like you're saying, down to the coloring, there are two trades running at the same time. And I don't understand how these two stories gel together. They're both okay on their own, but I'm very curious. Yeah. Superman Unlimited, number 6 from DC Comics, written by Dan Slott, art by Raphael Albuquerque and Mike Norton. In this issue, Superman is down in the old Kryptonite City, the Emerald City, and battling for a Sunstone, I believe it is, which is a relic of Krypton. It leads to some big changes by the end, thanks to fight between Lois and also Superman, of course, and this nation. Pete, what do you think about this one?
Well, first off, I want to shout out to Kirky, big fan of the Raphael Albuquerque's work. I'm just here for the Supermobile because that is a hysterical thing from my childhood, where it's a Superman spaceship with just arms and hands in the front that can punch and grab things. So that just kind of always brings me back to a nostalgic place. So I was just kind of having a fun time with that. Lois is great in it. Solid art. Fun to use the spaceship.
Yeah, I enjoy this. I think this is fun. And like you're saying, it's classic dad slot to be like, I'm going to bring a toy into this. And let's have a good time. And that's okay. Not everything needs to be serious. Sometimes it can be ridiculous. So
it kind of reminds me of the Spider-Mobile.
100%.
Yeah.
Absolutely. That's exactly what it is. And that's okay. It's fun. Comics are silly sometimes. Let's have a good time. Yeah. Here's another great time. The Incredible Hulk, number 30 from Marvel, written by Philip Kennedy Johnson, art by Nick Klein. This is a huge issue that Philip has been promising will change everything for the Hulk. The biggest status quo shift ever. And maybe he was a little overhyping it, but like,
I don't know, man.
Not completely, because big stuff goes down here as he finishes this stage of his overarching storyline with Eldest and the Mother of Horrors, with some surprising revelations there, a big fight between not exactly the Abomination of the Hulk. So big changes going down here. What'd you think, Pete?
Well, first off, fantastic cover. This is a crazy ish, bro. I mean, Banner gets ripped out of the Hulk. Dude, that was so gross. Oh, man. And then this kind of idea of the Infernal Hulk, where we just kind of see a giant fist. So join us next time. Holy crap. This is just body horror, but I'm having a great time. I'm also nervous, but I'm excited. This is just really incredible and super badass, and shit is going down quick. So I'm excited to see what's going to happen. Wobbies.
Yeah, this is a great team on this. Nick Klein has been fantastic on the art, drawing the most horrific images possible, like you mentioned, with that ripping batter out thing. And dude, I am really curious.
I was like, I couldn't believe what I was seeing.
Pretty gross.
That's gonna stay with me for a while.
I'm curious to see. The implication seems to be that this Infernal Hulk is going to go after the Marvel Universe, and I'm excited to get out of this like dreamlike wasteland and see what happens when that Hulk gets back on Earth and starts tangling with people. So great run so far.
Yes.
Lucky Devils, number 5 from Image Comics, written by Charles Soule, art by Ryan Brown. A lot of big stuff goes down in this issue as our main two devils who are trying to corrupt two people end up, as you can see on the cover here, fighting.
Yeah.
They haven't quite seen eye to eye this whole time about what to do next as things get worse in hell. The noose is tightening on them, and we even get a big curse words, not even an Easter egg, but just a paddle.
Wizard, come on. Yeah, I mean, that's just Wizard. Curse words, shout out. That's just fun. Just fun.
What'd you think about this one, Pete?
So, yeah, you kind of got these two demons in hell, and unfortunately they were kind of on board with this plan, and now they're on different sides. And it's heartbreaking because Vale is kind of, pulling away, and she wants to kind of keep doing horrible things. And he's like, maybe we should be telling these humans to be doing good stuff. So classic fight scenario where, relationships are hard and you can start out on the same page, but, things happen. Life changes people and even demons. So I don't know, man. It's heartbreaking, but I'm pulling for these devils to work things out and not hurt humans in the process, if that's possible.
Yeah, I guess we'll see. I do like the
Love the other layering. Love on. The pace. Yeah.
Yes. Yeah. Love the art. Love the pace. There's always some fun, weird, funny stuff that's going on here as well. I think we're losing track of the humans and the essential concept a little bit as they start to layer on all of these different things in this book. But I'm still intrigued by it. And I'm curious about whatever mission statement they're going to end up at, because Charles is always very smart about that stuff.
Yeah, he's a very smart writer.
Artificial number two from Image Comics by Maria. Love it. This is about a woman who has hired a sex cyborg for a weekend, and she hasn't really paying attention to the directions. We all do that. We get something. We don't really do it. We're like, it's fine. Man. I got it. But this is going to turn out pretty bad for her as an old flame comes back that she has to reject while this android is still in role play mode. We know that things are going to get worse from there. And as usual with a Maria Lovett book, there's a lot of sex going on. There's a lot of tech. There's a lot of satire happening.
Can't read this in a public setting.
Sure can. Sure can't. Particularly not if you take it and you turn it around and show
yeah,
it.
Yeah, show people. Yeah, yeah.
Don't do that.
Don't read this to a group of second graders. You know,
absolutely not. Like, don't bring that in as your reading material. Be like, hey, kids, you want to hear the story? It's story time. Here we go. You got to learn about sex cyborgs.
Hey, kids.
Sometimes.
Yeah. Yeah. Listen, in the future, we all might be fucking cyborgs. So we got to learn the lessons soon.
And to be clear, we're not going to be like, we're fucking cyborgs. We're going to be fucking cyborgs. Just to be clear, kids.
Yeah. Yeah. So
and you look over at the teacher. The teacher's like, thumbs up.
Yeah.
Good work. Two thumbs up, Pete.
Yeah. While you're getting kicked out of class, blame us. We'll write you a pass. We'll write you a note. Listen, the art's glorious. The artist does unbelievable artistic work here. So go ahead, Alex.
Yeah, no, I just think this is like a good, smart, funny tech nightmare. I do like that she keeps getting further instructions. It's like, nah, in the garbage, which is just, this isn't even like she's done anything particularly wrong that she's going to be punished for by this android going out of control so much as doing the thing we all do. Like I was saying, of you kind of glance at the instructions. You don't do that. You follow them bit by bit.
If I am familiar with something and done it a bunch of times, I don't read the instructions. But first time, yeah, I'm going to read them.
I do think it's very typical behavior, though, and I like this is extrapolating it to the worst extreme possible. It is. It's funny. It's arch. I don't know. And like you said, great art from Lovett. Why don't we move on to our last book here, Godzilla Destroys the Marvel Universe, number four from Marvel, written by Jerry Duggan, art by Javier Garon and Paco Medina. After banishing Godzilla for many years, he is back and coming for the Marvel Universe. So what do? They form a giant mech to take him down.
Yeah, Voltron styles. Mm-hmm. And Cyclops, you're the heat vision. This is fun. This is just a fun idea. We get Hulk fighting Godzilla, then the Submariner. I thought really was super nice to help out Hulk, and it kind of brings a giant crab like lobster to fight Godzilla and distract for a little while. And then the Black Panther is able to build this Voltron suit. We get to see where all the heroes are in the Voltron suit, which I'm sure won't be a problem once they start fighting Godzilla. But hey, this is just fun setup and just kind of fun versus, type of thing. So yeah, I like the art has a light, playful tone to it, which I think makes a lot of sense for this. Yeah, this is just exactly what it sets up to do and delivers.
I am surprised about the light, jokey tone that has been throughout the series, but we're four issues in, so there's nothing I can fight against. I do like the cross-section showing all the different heroes and the different part of the, Jet Jaguar suit or whatever they're building there. And the one, thing that I don't love about the art, Justin and I this weekend talked to this artist, Pharaoh Pei, who's doing TMNT Godzilla over at IDW. Sure. We talked a little bit about how you capture scale when you're doing something like this, because TMNT, small, Godzilla big. You can listen to that interview. I think it's going on later on this week, but it really struck me.
I won't, but thank you.
No problem. Tim Seeley. We also talked to Tim Seeley in Faroe Bay.
Oh, okay. Fine.
All right. Thanks, Pete. Anyway, the scale was off in this issue just because, like, you saw Hulk injecting the Pym particles, but he was the same size throughout, at least in terms of what we were seeing. Like, we weren't seeing the background. We weren't seeing him grow big, which destroyed the size matchup between, oh, man, we have a kaiju-sized Hulk taking on Godzilla. You don't get the sense of how huge that is. And same thing when the Jet Jaguar suit first came in.
Yeah.
It was just kind of the same size, which makes it feel small. So yeah, there was a little bit of those issues that I was having throughout the issue, issues through the issue. But, you know, it's fun. It's light. It is what it is.
I have an issues with the issue. Well, what I'm excited for is I'm hoping Godzilla will knock off the head and it will just knock off Cyclops, and then they'll continue fighting without Cyclops and win.
We'll see what happens.
Yeah, we'll see what happens.
And that is it for The Stack. If you'd like to support this podcast and all the podcasts we do, patreon.com/comicbookclub. Also, we do a live show every Tuesday night at 7 p.m. to Facebook and YouTube. Come hang out. We would love to chat with you about comic books, Apple, Spotify, Android, or the app of your choice. To subscribe, listen, and follow the show, comicbookclublive.com. For this podcast and many more, until next time, we'll see you at the Comic Book Club. And they let the secrets leak. And occasionally